Full Court Press, a very special edition episode, a weekend episode of Full Court Press, presented to you as always by Geek Vibes Nation. I'm your host, Nick Smith, and joining me on this lovely Saturday afternoon is Juwan Carter. What up, Juwan?
What is going on? I'm so excited to talk basketball. Hopefully that was a lot better than I have been.
That was better than last episode, that's for damn sure. yeah, man, like we got a lot of cool shit to talk about. We got game 3, game 4, we got a big trade to talk about. So, yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. All right, let's jump into it. So the Raptors taking care of business on the road. Game 3, obviously, without Klay Thompson, without Kevon Looney, without KD, as they've been without for this whole series. The Raptors just got it done. They never seemed like they were in danger of losing that game. Every time, you know, the Warriors would like get in striking distance, you know, the Raptors would just go on a short little spurt, or like go bucket for bucket with them and just maintain that 7-8 point lead. And that just kind of transitioned throughout the whole game. I was a little nervous that I predicted almost kind of a blowout, because I thought either Klay wouldn't come back or Klay would be very limited when he came back. And so I thought the Raptors would be able to like really handle their business. And they didn't, like, the game was closer than I thought it would be, honestly. But ultimately, the Raptors were able to take care of business. Kawhi was big down the stretch. It was kind of an all-hands-on-deck performance. Siakam was, like, brilliant in, like, the first half. We had, like, a steady, like, performance from Kyle Lowry. He wasn't huge in the first half, but he was still efficient, and then he really took over in the second half and was, like, making big plays down the stretch, and especially in the third quarter of that game. Gasol had some big plays. DeMarcus Cousins saw a stark regression from where he was in game 2. And the Raptors just kind of took control of the series. What was your big takeaways from game 3?
I thought they needed to do more for Klay. I think Sorry. Completely forgot. Let me start off by saying you were completely right on it never seeming. You did call it before the game, saying that Toronto would kind of make it feel like it wasn't even close. I didn't see that coming.
It was closer than I thought. Like, I'll give them credit for that. It was closer than I thought it would be.
It ended up not really being that close.
Right, but like throughout the game, it was always
right.
The Warriors were always just like a run away from being tied or taking lead, and they could just never go on that run. Partly because they didn't have Klay. Obviously, they didn't have KD. They didn't have Looney to protect the paint. And DeMarcus Cousins just didn't play well. So you couple all those things together, along with Iguodala and Green missing shots, and, you know, that's what you get.
Yeah, and I will say, I will slightly pat myself on the back for the huge game I thought Steph was going to have. But seemingly he would have had to have had that big of a game. So that's not really me making a bold prediction. It's just more so like if Steph didn't show up, like they weren't ever going to be in that game.
And he did show up tenfold in game 3.
He did. He definitely did. It was frustrating watching that game, because it was just like a game where Draymond could have easily had 25, 10 and 10. He didn't.
Right.
A game where DeMarcus Cousins seemingly could have played better. I'm not saying had like a huge game, but just played better than he did. He didn't. Iggy, who literally should retire, like Livingston after this year, gave all he could. You have pieces that are like veteran pieces, but they're not young veteran pieces. So it's like you're not going to get a breakout 30-point game from Iggy. Livingston's not about to drop you 20 real quick, 15 to 20 real quick.
He was great in game 4,
he was. But yeah, he was. Yeah, I agree with you.
No, but you're right. So you don't have that, and it's interesting because I think they have these spurts of like really great defensive play, and this is attributable to game 4 as well. But it wasn't sustainable. And the biggest problem with their team as it is currently constructed without Kevin Durant is that the guys that they bring off the bench can't play defense, and the guys that they would like to play, who play elite level defense, can't score the ball. So it's like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like Iguodala, yeah, he made that big three at the end of game 2, but you can't rely on him to make 3-point shots for you. You can't rely on Draymond Green to be an efficient scorer either. So, you know, without having, especially in game 3, without having Clay, but furthermore, just without having KD for this whole series thus far, you don't have the necessary amount of balance between offensive productivity and defensive sustainability in order to play for 48 minutes.
Right. And I'll say this. Because me and you have had this conversation. I think benches, when you have an elite starting lineup, are overrated. Especially in the playoffs. But we are seeing that if you don't have not even an ounce of bench help, one player going down could drastically swing everything. We're seeing that with Durant going down has just drastically swung everything. And I know a lot of people are going to go, well, you need Durant for the Rockets. And it's like, yeah, but Rockets, Warriors Rockets, seemingly are the equivalent of what LeBron did with Toronto when he was in the East. The Rockets just can't get past Golden State. They just can't.
That's very true.
I don't know why, but they can't. It's different when you play a team whose biggest strength is defense, who happens to have guys that can hit shots. That is when, if you're the Warriors, you're like, damn, we've never had to play a team whose first strength was defense, and then they just happen to be able to score really well when need be. So it's just they don't really know what to do with it. So, and I think if Durant was there, he could help neutralize Kawhi, just like Kawhi could neutralize Durant, so that'd be a really interesting matchup to see. It's just the Warriors, their focus is, all right, we'll put Clay, on Lowry when we need to. We'll have Iggy on Leonard when we need to. But what happens when your two best defenders that are healthy in Clay and Iguodala aren't at 100%, either one of them? Kawhi's going to expose that. He's going to expose that the entire time. And I remember and he completely did it. So to me, it's like that game 3 just showcased you that the Raptors are right now with no Durant on that team. And I would even say I would make an argument even with Durant. They're just a better team. And I don't even think it's necessarily the idea of being out-coached. I think whenever the other team doesn't have a lot of its pieces, especially its biggest piece, it's hard to say you're being out-coached because you look at Curry and you're like, well, he dropped to 47, and then you look at game 4 where you're like, well, him and Clay didn't have huge games but had games that should have gotten them a win. It's hard to say that you were out-coached. But I will say Nick Nurse, I believe is his name, I have to give him way more credit than I have. I thought Nick Nurse and Kawhi was the equivalent of LeBron and Ty Lue. To where it was like, it's easy to coach a huge talent like that. The talent is what makes the game easier for you to coach. But Nick Nurse has been showing me through the throughout these playoffs that he does make good coaching adjustments that you can't just look at and go, well, you got Kawhi, so it doesn't matter. No, he's doing a really good coaching job. So that game 3 was just wow. Golden State, you needed to win that one. And then, wow, you needed to win game 4. And you somehow lost both. Yikes.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I think with that, we can move on to game 4. like they needed they kind of punted on game three by like resting Clay, and I think that was smart. Obviously, like if they had somehow managed to win game three, then like you're looking at a situation where you don't feel like you have to rush anybody back. And so, you know, that to me, that's smart. But with game four, the fact they lost game three, they obviously brought Klay Thompson back. They Kevon Looney made like a miraculous comeback that nobody expected. I mean, I thought he was going to be
got
done
a
for
Lazarus
the series.
Pit. They got a Lazarus pit, Nick. I just want to point that out. They got a Lazarus pit over there.
Yeah. One would think. Yeah, I guess KD's just not using it, but maybe I don't know. But regardless, like, you know, they brought both those guys back for game four, and they got off to a hot start, and they pretty much controlled the first half of that game. But even still, like, even with them controlling the game, and Klay Thompson had a fucking remarkable game. Like, Klay Thompson was, like, very solid throughout this whole game. He didn't get the notion that he was quite as effective defensively as he normally is. And that's, you know, to be expected given his injury. But offensively, I mean, he was hitting shots. Like, it was every time he stroked a three, I was like, that's in. Even if it wasn't, like, I was like, oh, well, that's going in. I totally expected it. And, you know, he was basically able to kind of be that calming force for them throughout the first half of that game. And then in the third quarter, the quarter in which the, you know, the Warriors normally blow things wide open, the Raptors were just able to kind of turn the tide and just like slowly chip away at them. And, you know, they regained the lead early in the third quarter. And then it went back and forth for the majority of the third quarter. And then down the stretch of the third quarter in the last like 4 or 5 minutes, the Raptors just built up a solid lead. I think they went into the fourth quarter with a 12-point lead. And like they were just able to essentially like manhandle the Warriors to a degree that I don't feel like we've ever really seen. I feel like even with the Cavs in 2016, it wasn't quite in the same fashion. With the Cavs, it wasn't as much defense. Some of it was just Tristan Thompson being a beast, you know, on the block and rebounding and all that defensively. But, you know, with this team, it was like they were guarding the perimeter on an elite level. Everybody was hitting shots. I think we talked about this with our preview for game three and like what Toronto needed out of their guys. And you brought up Siakam, and while I did agree that like Siakam needed to, you know, play well, and he definitely did in both of these games. To me, I was very on board with the all hands on deck theory. In games three and four, Siakam played well, Gasol played well enough, Lowry played amazingly well. You got a good performance out of Van Fleet in both these games. So all the way around, this team performed very well. Danny Green obviously was great in game three. He wasn't great in game four by any stretch of the imagination, but he did hit a couple clutch shots down the stretch. All of their guys played great. Serge Ibaka was dominant at the end of game three, blocking so many shots and just like protecting the paint. And then in game four, like he was so efficient with his scoring. He had that one play where he kind of like dribbled behind his back and took a step back jumper from like, I don't know, like 20 feet and nailed it like right into DeMarcus Cousins' face. And I was just like, oh my God. Okay. Like that was a total no. Yes. Type of play. Like you did not want to take that shot, but like when it went in, you were just like, okay, cool. Everybody is picking up the slack. It's an all hands on deck thing. And when you have a star like Kawhi Leonard, you can afford to do that. You can really afford to not have a quote unquote second guy. You can just kind of make things work where they work and how they work, and you know, Lowry has some buckets, Van Vliet has some buckets, Ibaka makes some big shots, Siakam does, Gasol does, and you just make it work game to game, and whoever's got the hot hand, you go with him. When you got a guy like Kawhi, who's going to be the sustainable factor, and essentially, like, again, Kawhi kept them in this game in the first quarter. In that first quarter, like, they were atrocious. Nobody was making shots. Kawhi Leonard was the only guy who could give them anything in the first quarter of game four. And he basically, he made like a big three shortly before halftime and like brought it within, I think, I want to say 7 or 8 points, and almost hit a big three going into the second quarter to like cut it to three. I think it was 6 because they ended up pulling off 2 points from a shot that Steph Curry made that was actually happened after a shot clock violation. But so it ended up being 3 points. But like, you know, obviously Kawhi was just like had the hot hand going in, and like that's the thing. This guy like came into this game, looked at it, saw what was happening, knew what he needed to do for his team, and just kept his team afloat in the first quarter. And then they all kind of started picking up in the second quarter. And then when they hit the third quarter, everybody had the necessary confidence to like go out there and really contribute. And, you know, that's just a testament to Kawhi. It's a testament to Masai Ujiri. It's a testament to the Raptors. And like, good on him, man. Like that game was an amazing game to watch from the perspective of what a defensive-minded team can do when they have an elite offensive player who can help get his guys the confidence to go out there and buy them the time in order to make an impact on the offensive side of the floor. And it was remarkable to watch. And I you know, as much as I felt early on in the game, in game three, like I felt like, you know, there was no way that Golden State was going to be able to like overcome it. I felt the same way in game four as it pertained to Toronto. I just felt like Golden State's got the momentum. They got Clay back. Like, Toronto's not going to be able to overcome this. And they did. Like, they were able to overcome it. So much so that at the end of the third quarter, they went on this huge streak and ended up going into the fourth quarter up by 12. It was an amazing performance, like, by all of the Raptors, but particularly Kawhi Leonard. What was your big takeaway from game four?
Lack of effort from Golden State. I can't tell you how many times throughout this series I've seen a ball hit the backboard and no one from Golden State jump.
There was that one play where it was a three ball, I believe, and it came off the rim and it bounced back to like mid court, and it was mid court before Fran Van Vliet finally picked it up and started like going the other way, and there was like a triangle of Warriors who were like the ball was right in the middle of a triangle of Warriors, and Van Vliet just like rushed in and grabbed it and went the other way with it. And I was just like, really? Like, y'all just like, none of y'all going to go for that ball? There's three of you right there. None of you made an active effort to go get that ball.
Yeah. And I've seen it throughout the series. Like, it's not just this. I feel as though they're very content with one or two things. I think either Golden State plays as if they know Durant will be back, and when he's back, it'll make everything better, because they have come back from a 3-1 lead. You know, it's not like they don't know what it takes to do it. They've done it. It was one of the things that kicked off, you know, their legacy as, you know, Clay and Steph's legacy. So
Game
to
six,
me,
yeah.
Right, right. One of those games, Clay went bananas. Clay
game
legit
six.
Was the
yeah.
reason they weren't – yes, that was the reason they weren't sent home. He just went
yeah.
freaking bananas. So we know they're
yeah.
all capable of it. So I think they're either thinking that or it's just one of those things where it's just – it's progressive fatigue. We know not near one of their starting five. I'd say maybe Draymond and Steph, you could maybe say, are the more healthy of the five. They're banged up, and they're playing as if they are. But to me, I would understand if they're playing and you're just getting outplayed because you don't have the talent or your guys just can't do it. No, I'm just seeing a Raptors team that just wants it more. They want it more
yeah.
because they know how long it's been, especially Kyle Lowry, the guy that's been on that team the longest. You've been to the doorstep of the finals, just never been able to walk in. So it's like he knows
mm-hmm.
how hard it is to get to the finals, let alone get
yeah.
to the finals and then win it. So it's like they're playing like that, and I respect it so
yeah.
much. But I'm watching Golden – like that first quarter, Nick, remember when DeMarcus brought it up the court three times and got the ball stolen each of the three times?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you
yeah.
doing? You have three primary ball handlers. In Draymond, Clay, and Steph, why is the ball ever in DeMarcus Cousins' hand? Ever?
Yeah.
Like
at
just
that
because
point
he can
court.
Bring it up court.
Yeah.
Yes, just because he can bring it up court does not mean your big man should ever bring it up court. Let alone
right.
start to break down what the play is going to be.
Right. Yeah. No. Absolutely. And I found it to be no coincidence that I mean, how many minutes did he play in Game Four? Very, very fucking little, if at all.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 15. I just looked it up. Played 15 minutes in Game Four. Because like he just wasn't effective, and with you know Kevon Looney coming back, obviously, you know he was a guy that they trusted more. And down the stretch of that game, they even trusted Bogut more. They played Bogut in minutes down the stretch of that game. Looney played 20. Bogut only played 11 to Cousins 15. But like late in the game when they were down and needed like that went to the guy they trusted. They definitely went to Bogut when Looney couldn't play. So like this team is just discombobulated. They don't really know exactly what to do as far as like how to capitalize on you know what's going to be their best lineup. And the thing is, I don't like the notion of well they need Durant or this team doesn't need Durant. It's like well, it's not that simple. Yeah, they really need Durant because they don't have the adequate depth that they would have had without him.
Right.
Like, if they had never gotten him, they would have had more depth and they'd be fine. Not in the sense that they would have won all the, you know, championships or games or whatever that they won, but they would be, you know, they would be adequate. But because they don't have that depth and they also don't have Durant, yes, they need him. They really do. They really need him because they gave up all of this depth in order to get him. And now that they don't have that depth and they don't have him, they don't really have anywhere else to go. I mean, they do need him. That's not to say that they needed him to join their team in order to do what they did, you know, up until this point. Obviously, he helped them. But they need him now because of all of the things that they gave up in order to get him.
Right. And I will say, I think, especially hearing, that's why I'd never listen to Stephen A. Smith's show anymore. But guys like
I
him
don't either.
Saying, guys like him saying, if Durant's back, all your problems. No, they're not. Because you're now asking someone who hasn't
right.
played in weeks
right.
to come in and drop 40 for you. And then you're assuming
right.
Clay can drop 25, and then you're assuming Steph
and
can
you're
drop
assuming,
30.
And
Sorry.
You're assuming that the offense, like, flows flawlessly. Like, we all
right.
know that this offense works, like, differently with Durant involved. So you're going to have to kind of, like, revert back to how you play with Durant, there's so many question marks. Don't get me wrong, and I'm sure you agree with me here, this team's way better off with like Durant coming back for game five than they are with it without him. But
right.
Like that doesn't mean all their fucking troubles are over. Like they're already down.
No.
They're already down two games that like they have a one game margin for the next three games, assuming they don't lose in the meantime. And like, yeah, that's like Durant is not going to solve all your problems. He's going to help, but that's not just Durant coming back is not enough to essentially be your savior.
Right. And I think it's unfair to put the pressure on him in that sense, because what if he does come back, right? And Kawhi
and they still lose.
Right.
Right.
And Kawhi neutralizes them and the
especially
game is still in the hand.
Especially considering he's not 100%.
Right. And especially being that we saw what Klay and Steph can do, right? And what Klay and Steph can do is how they're down 3-1. So it's like, all right, if Durant's not 100% and Kawhi is kind of bothering him, you're going to need Klay and Steph to carry that load for Durant, and Durant just to be the cherry on top. But we have not seen Klay and Steph on the floor together in the same game be able to do that. So to me, it's like, and then if you go back to even, because remember, if Kawhi could get a better stance on that. Remember when Steph in, I think it was game three, I could be mixing it up, but passed it to Iguodala, but the pass to Steph was one that was like a 50-50 ball, like Kawhi could have gotten it if he got there a second earlier.
Yeah. That's game two.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry, game two. So if Kawhi gets the bucket, they go to overtime, and Toronto wins that game, Warriors are already home, and we're prepping for a rally in Toronto. So to me, it's like if you're Golden State, you don't have the luxury of saying, oh, no, once we get the big guy back, we're about to make this run. It's like it's not that simple. Because if the series was tied and then they just went up a game, I could see it like, oh, okay, yeah, all you're missing is Durant. That's not where we're at. We're at the fact that you're down 3-1 and it very easily could have been a sweep, a 4-0 sweep.
Right.
So to
By
me,
the way,
I don't think it's fair to put that on Durant.
No, I don't either. By the way, was I the only one who noticed when there's like the shot after the game? I believe either Steph or Klay was walking. It had to be Steph because Klay walked off real quick. So I think it had to be Steph. He's like walking down the tunnel, and then they bring up this little highlight at the bottom of the screen, and it says, teams that go down 3-1 are like 33-1 all time. Or teams that go up 3-1 are 33-1 all time. And I was like, really? Really, ESPN? Really, ABC's going to lay that stat on top of Steph right now, like, while he's walking down the fucking tunnel just losing the game? Like, some cold ass shit, bro. Like, that's a real cold shit. Luckily, they didn't have like an asterisk beside it saying, this was indeed the Warriors led by Steph Curry, like, you know, under it. But, like, they might as well have. Like, I was just like, holy shit. Just fucking no holds barred on this motherfuckers. Nevertheless, yeah, I'm very skeptical. I mean, I will be super shocked if Golden State is able to pull off three straight wins at this point. Like,
I'm going to say this next. I'm going to say this. I'd be shocked if they won in Toronto Monday. That's
game five,
yeah,
me
that's
too.
Where I'm at. So let alone winning the series. Because if they win if they win in Toronto, I'm going to tell you this right now. If they win in Toronto, and there's even a slight shot Durant can come back for 6-7, I'm giving it to the Warriors. Because if they can win on the road here in a game that's crucial, I think going back home, they could win that game. Especially if they can get Durant back for the last two games, I would then kind of move the pendulum more their way. But I don't even see them winning this game five. So let alone making it a series, I don't see them winning game five.
Well, I don't know what the odds are on teams that are down 3-1 who win game five coming back to win the series, but I know that only one team has ever done it. So it's not 33-1, but it's something in one. I'm not going to say it's done, because it's never done until it's done. But it, like, even if they win game five, I'm not going to give them a whole lot of credence to win the next two games, even if KD comes back. And, like, honestly, at this point, I just don't expect him to come back. He wants to come back. He's trying to come back from all the reports that I hear. But, like, he's just – his fucking leg is all fucked up, dude. Like, and, like, he can't play right now. And, you know, like, I don't know. Maybe if they win – if he doesn't play in game five, but they win game five and they go back to Oracle – maybe that's enough to make him, like, come out on a hobbled leg. But, like, seriously, dude, if I'm KD, like, I gotta know that, like, I can actually fucking contribute. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to know that I'm 100% healthy or anything, but I gotta know that, like, I'm going to be effective. I'm going to be helpful to my team, effective to my team. And if his leg's as fucked up as what I've heard, he's not going to be helpful nor be able to contribute to helping them win a game. In that case, like, dude, don't put yourself in that court. Don't put yourself in that position. Like, I don't fault him at all, like, in that. Go ahead.
To me, I would fault Durant if he came back knowing he wasn't 100%. And looked bad. I would fault him. I would not give him the excuse of, well, you know, he was injured and he was just trying to help us. No, man, no. Mainly because this narrative right now, how the Warriors are looking without you, I think helps you, especially going into your free agency. It helps you tremendously. It helps your storyline, and it helps
not
the entire –
not that he needs the free agency help, but
– No. I just mean for his legacy. It helps knowing that on your way out, you were such a big need to that team, with how bad they looked. And let's not kid ourselves. The Warriors from game one have looked bad.
I'll say this, Juwan.
But
speaking of let's not kid ourselves, let's not pretend that there won't be a narrative out there that says, like, KD could have come back and helped this team but was so selfish because of his free agency desires that, you know, knowing he was going to go to the Knicks, that, like, he didn't want to risk further injury. Like, you know that's going to happen. Like, people hate Kevin Durant so much, you know that's going to happen.
I get you.
It's stupid, but it's
going to
happen.
To me personally, that's the furthest thing from the truth, only because this. Kevin Durant can tell the Knicks, look, what happened was I tore something. I'm not going to be able to play for whoever I go with the first half of next season. The Knicks would still max Kevin Durant out. The Warriors max Kevin Durant out. The Nets would max him out. So the narrative he's just doing
everybody
this
would.
So the next team would sign him.
You're explaining logically why that narrative is stupid. I'm just telling you that narrative will be presented. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
But nevertheless, like, yeah, okay, so we've kind of already alluded to it, game five. I'm kind of expecting the Raptors to win this. I kind of hope that at least it's like a close game. I'm not, like I said, I'm not expecting KD to come back in this series. I just think there's more going on with his leg. And his hamstring / Achilles and all of how that connects that, like, we don't know. And, you know, ultimately, I think he wants to play. He knows he can't play. The doctors know he shouldn't play. And so he's not going to play. And I think the team knows that, too. And, you know, like, they're just going to have to try and win without him, and I just don't think they can. Like, this Raptors team is just too good. Like, I overestimated, and you know, it's funny because I overestimated the Warriors, but I also underestimated the Raptors, because, like, particularly because of the way they played Philly. And I don't think I paid close enough attention to how dominant they were down the stretch against Milwaukee. But the way they played Philly, they did not look like a legit title contender. Philly looked like the better team in that series. And basically Toronto got out by the hair of their chinny chin chins. And, you know, but they seemed to like flip a switch when they got to Milwaukee, and they continue that into this series. So I will freely admit that I underestimated them, but I think I also overestimated, you know, the Warriors. And I even kind of alluded to this in the pod that I did with I think Joel. I said, you know, like, perhaps there's a possibility that we are maybe giving the Warriors too much credence on sweeping the Blazers, because they just match up really well with the Blazers, and the fact that the Blazers had like the easiest path to get to the Eastern or the Western Conference Finals out of any team to get to the Conference Finals in either league, either conference rather, they had the easiest path. It still took them, 7 games in the semifinals to get there. Maybe we're just, giving them too much credit. And I think there's a part of that that's true, in the sense that the Warriors, went up against a team in the Blazers that were never really a legit contender. But the Raptors went back to back with teams that were legit contenders in the East. They had to fight Philly, and it took them 7 games, and then they had to fight through, Milwaukee. Whereas, the Warriors, they had to fight through Houston. But once they were able to do that, they could just kind of go into coast mode. And I felt like maybe that kind of transitioned into the finals, whereas Toronto had to battle the whole way to get there. And even back to the first round, even though it wasn't ever really close as far as a series in general, they did lose that first game against Orlando in a heartbreaking fashion. So even that, gave them that kind of spirited edge to really go after it. I don't think the Warriors, they just look so lackadaisical throughout this whole season. Even against the Clippers, they looked that way. And seemingly that's why they lost 2 games. They kind of buckled down for the Rockets, but then they look lackadaisical, granted within a sweep, but they probably should have won those games by a larger margin than they did. When they came into this series, you're still seeing this lackadaisical nature, whether it be I'll say this. I think the biggest thing that I see is just Draymond Green's, what he said after game 3, which is, well, you know what? At this point, we go win game 4, and then we go back to Toronto and we win game 5, and then we come back here and win game 6, and then we party, and that's how it's gonna happen. And it's
that reminds me of
there's a fine line between confidence and blind fucking whatever. But yeah, what does it remind you of?
It reminds me of when Clint Capella said, I want the Warriors, then didn't show up not 1 game of that series.
Yeah.
So it's you kind of speak before you're in the moment. And then I think with players, I think what they don't realize is you have to be on. You can't say stuff like that and then you only have 8 points, Draymond. You have to ball. You can't be one of the reasons why that team lost if you're going to be the one that's that vocal. So I think – and it's a lack of effort It just is. Like, it kind of seems like they're just ready for the season to be over. And it's like, that's fine to play that way if this is game one of the first round of the playoffs. Like, that's fine. Like, you've been there. You've won your championships. You just don't have the guys. You just want to go home. Like, that's fine. You can't get to the finals, and now you're playing as if it's just like, whatever, we'll just be back next year. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, no. You can't take that for granted.
Well,
all of you guys need to ball out.
I wouldn't argue that they're playing that way. I would just argue that, like, the way that, like, especially Draymond, the way that he's talking, he's trying to project this image that he is not afraid of them and he knows everything's going to be okay. And it's like, dude, like, no. Everything's, like, you need to be, like, you need to not be so confident that everything's going to be okay. You need to project, like, if you want to be a leader, you need to project this notion that, like, dude, like, we're on the fucking ropes now. Like, we need to buckle down and fucking get shit together because we have not played well. And that's not what's happening. You know what I mean? Like, that's the opposite of what Draymond is projecting.
That's why I love guys like Kobe. They were playing on I saw on ESPN's Instagram. Kobe in that Celtics series where they're up 2-0. And the guy goes, Kobe, are we ever going to see, like, a smile from you? Like, you should be happy. You're up 2-0. And he was like, is the series over after two games? No. All
right,
how many
right.
games? Four. All right, cool. So when we win four games and we win the championship, that's when you'll see me smile. But, like, I have nothing to be excited about till we hoist that trophy. So it's like, don't come to me in game two like, yeah, everything should be great. Like, you guys are up 2-0. No. Our goal is to win the series, not just two games.
Right.
So if you're Draymond,
and that's what you're seeing from the Raptors.
Great. Right. That's exactly what you're seeing from the Raptors. And to me, I don't mind Golden State having confidence. I mean, you heard Clay having confidence before the game with saying, you know, the guy asked him, like, you're going to have a great game six performance. And he's like, dude, I don't even know what I'm eating for dinner tonight. Like, don't ask me about game six. Like, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, I don't mind you guys having confidence. It's just the one thing you can't lack when you hit the floor is the want to. Like, you're lacking energy. Like, the fact that the Raptors are getting rebounds when there's five Warriors and one Raptor, like, come on. The fact that they're able to run screens for Van Vliet to get him open threes like he's Curry, that's effort. And I never thought I'd watch Golden State and say they lack effort. So that's why I say, Nick, I feel like they just want the series to be over because they're playing as if it's over. Each game, they play with a lack of effort as if the series is over. That's what I mean by that. So it's like, you guys got to get the sense of, we got to get a win now, and we got to turn it up with or without Durant.
Well, I think they opened game four like that. I think they opened game three like that. They just they didn't play the whole game that way. And again, to me, the biggest thing is just, they, especially after game four, like, they just got their ass kicked, and Steph and Clay had all the right answers as far as what they expect going forward and what they want to try to achieve and how they approach the rest of the series. And Draymond was, again, just like, nah, man, it's all good. Like, this is how we all planned it. Like, it's just like, dude, that's the kind of impression that I got from him. And I was just like, dude, this is like, I know you're trying to project this confidence. It's just like, you're coming off as just like not caring or not. And I know that's not the case. I'm just it's the way he comes off, and I don't know. It's slightly concerning. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. Obviously, we still have, game five will be a huge game as far as just, like, where the series goes. I mean, obviously, if the Raptors win, they win the series. If the Warriors win, they go back home. And maybe you give them a slight edge because They go home to play game six, and if they win that, then they've won two in a row. They still have to go back and play in Toronto, but, you know, maybe they have some momentum. Maybe they have KD back. But it's just, at this point, I feel like, obviously, the more complete team is Toronto, and they just have a very stark advantage, both having a 3-1 lead and just having an identity and knowing what they're going out there to do night to night. And, you know, furthermore, you know, we didn't in this game, you know, they didn't even get like a great game out of all their guys, which I thought they did get in game three. Danny Green like was not great, you know, throughout the majority of this game. And that, you know, that almost kind of hurt them in a sense. Siakam wasn't as good as he was in game four, at least in the first half of game three. But they got it that, you know, Gasol wasn't as good, but they got, you know, what they needed out of Lowry. They got what they needed out of Van Vliet. They got what they needed out of Ibaka. And then down the stretch, they got what they needed out of everybody. And obviously, they always get what they need out of Kawhi. So they just got a complete team, man. They're just like a really well put together team. And I think, I honestly think from the perspective of how Philly matched up against this team versus how this particular Golden State team matches up against them, I think they were totally prepared to play, to go against Golden State's defense by how Philly played them. I learned a lot from having to score on Philadelphia. That I think has certainly translated into these finals. And they even learned, you know, a lot from playing Milwaukee. And, you know, they're just a very veteran laden team. They have a lot of veterans, a lot of guys who, you know, have competed in big games and know what it's like to play on a big stage. And that's invaluable as well. So I think we just kind of maybe all underrated the Raptors, except honestly, Juwan, except you, surprisingly enough. Like I did pick the Raptors to win the East going into the finals, but I did pick Milwaukee to beat them before that series. Halfway through the Philly series, I picked them to beat Philly. And I think you were the only one out of all of us who picked Toronto to beat Milwaukee going into that series. And did you pick Toronto to beat Golden State?
I'm not going to lie to you. I don't remember. Because I do remember the last show we had. I was saying how Golden State got Durant back. Like, I would swing it in their favor. So I'm not going to be
right.
the guy that lies. I'm not 100% sure. I won't lie about that. But I definitely remember saying I thought they were going to beat Milwaukee. I had that
right.
much faith in Kawhi Leonard. So
right.
I will say I felt that. I definitely felt that. But I won't lie and say I knew about the finals because I did not
see
it happening.
I seem to vaguely remember that because that was a show with you, me, and Joel. And I think I said regardless of whether KD comes back or not, Warriors in six. And you were like, I don't know. Regardless of whether you picked it or not, I feel like your instincts were in the right place. So props on that. Before we wrap it up here, I want to talk a little bit about this Hawks and Nets trade. So just to break it down, the Hawks and Nets essentially agreed to a trade. It can't be conducted until the offseason officially begins. But it will be conducted in you know very shortly. So essentially, the Hawks take on Allen Crabbe's $18.5 million expiring contract, and also get the number 17 overall pick, the 2020 first rounder from Brooklyn, lottery protected, so 1 through 14 protected, and the Nets in return get Torian Prince. And the 2021 second round pick from the Atlanta Hawks. What do you think about this trade? On the surface level, and then we'll get into potential implications on what it might mean, but just like, what do you think about the surface level between the Hawks, the Nets? Do you think any particular side won this deal? You know, I don't really like looking at trades like that per se. But you know, if you want to kind of qualify a winner, feel free. But like, just what do you think about the trade in general for both sides?
I think it was a solid trade for both sides. excuse me. I don't really have much more to say than just a solid trade for both sides. As far as the idea of a winner of it, Brooklyn, if what they were trading for actually comes to fruition, then yeah, obviously they would have won it. But I mean, I look at the Hawks and I'm like, they're a few more pieces away from easily being a sixth, seventh, or eighth seed next season and possibly going forward. That team has such a bright future. So anything they do, I'm really interested in seeing because I kind of just feel like they understand what they need to do. And it's an organization that, what, Nick, maybe 8 to 10 years ago, I think maybe that's too long, was number one in the East. So, I mean, this is a franchise
that – wasn't even
that
long ago.
Oh, okay, then perfect. So this isn't a franchise that's been losing for so many years. Oh, okay, then cool. So this isn't a franchise that has no idea what it's doing. They know what they're doing. They just like to do it from the ground up. And since they can't really get a big-name free agent, I think the fact that they've even looked seemingly good is definitely positive in what the Hawks are going to do going forward.
Yeah. I also think this is a win-win. For the Hawks, you're obviously taking on some salary, but like anybody who thought the Hawks were going to attract, you know, a Kevin Durant or a Kawhi Leonard or a Klay Thompson, this is just a pipe dream. It's wishful thinking. And, you know, I think Schlink, obviously being a GM and actually knowing what he's dealing with, kind of, like, knew that. And so he thought he would use his cap space in a better manner, and he did. So taking on Crabbe's $18.5 million expiring in exchange for, you know, $3.5 million in expiring salary from Torian Prince, a guy that, you know, maybe they weren't 100% sold on and probably didn't necessarily want to re-sign, you know, or were worried about what the bottom line cost was going to be to re-sign him, especially since, you know, the league seems to value him a lot more than the Hawks organization does, because he's 6'8", 39% from three last year. He's looked at as a 3-and-D guy, but his defense isn't really all that good. Like it's like theoretically good defense, but hopefully if you get into your like play through your first 3 years in the league, your defense isn't theoretical anymore. It's actually just good or bad or whatever. But seemingly the league still thinks like he's a defensive player. And I don't think the Hawks were there anymore. Like watching him on a game to game basis. I think Hawks fans, and I'm sure, you know, their coaches, could kind of see like the holes in his defensive game. And, you know, they were like, yeah, maybe this isn't a guy we want to pay $15 million a year next year, which may be what he costs because he's a 6'8 wing who can shoot threes. Somebody's going to overpay him. Like, somebody's going to be like, we want that guy. We're going to overpay him. And, you know, the Hawks didn't want to be in a position where they were like, oh, shit, I guess we got a match. Because then he loses that trade value. So to go ahead and get out in front of that and to trade him, to get a first-round pick for him, and then to get an additional first-round pick for taking on Alan Crabbe's contract, great. Yeah, we had to send back a second-round pick, but we got a ton of those. So it's not a big deal. But, yeah, I mean, we got two first-round picks in the equation. I think it was a very, very solid deal for the Hawks. I don't think we're done. I think there's going to be other moves involved. I don't know if it's moving up. I don't know if it's moving down and getting additional assets in the future. It could be something as simple as just trading a couple second-round picks for future second-round picks, like we saw last year when they traded the number 34 pick, I believe, for two additional future second-round picks. And I believe those are coming from Charlotte. So, like, if Charlotte doesn't bring back Kemba, those all of a sudden, like, look like very good values. You know, obviously, last year I was upset when we did it because I really wanted us to take Mitchell Robinson. You know, that turned out to kind of, you know, seemingly after seeing how he played this year, seemed like that would have been a smart decision. But, you know, those two future second-round picks could turn into be something equally as good or, you know, combined together better than just one said Mitchell Robinson. So Schlink seems like he's just, like, so far ahead of the curve as far as, like, just as far as the moves that he makes. And I don't know. I'm excited to see what we're able to do with having an additional draft asset. Whether that means moving up, moving down, moving sideways, as far as it getting additional future assets, you know, the Hawks seem like they're in a really good place, and I'm very excited to see where we go from here. All right, as for, you know, the obvious talk that comes next, Brooklyn has freed up two max cap slots or the potential for two max cap slots, if you will, by moving on from their only bad contract in Allen Crabb. I think they have two 30% max cap spots right now, but like to sign, say, a 35% max guy like Kevin Durant, they'd have to move on from like Joe Harris or Spencer Dinwiddie for nothing in return, but those deals would be so easy to fucking make. Like you would even get assets just for sending those players off. Cause they're, you know, Harris can hit threes. Dinwiddie can be a starting point guard on five teams out there right now. You know, so that you're not going to have to give up assets to get rid of those guys. So with that being said, how nervous are you as a Knicks fan right now with the thought that the Nets are putting themselves into position in order to go after two max salary guys and the fact that we got the recent report in that Kyrie is the highest right now on the Nets?
Not nervous at all. You mean the same Kyrie that a few months ago said I'll stay here in Boston if you'll have me, then said ask me again in July. Then you heard the reports that he was looking forward to the Knicks. Now you're hearing reports that I'm looking forward to the Nets. You heard Lakers reports. Kyrie is the one guy that I'm kind of just like, whatever, man. I don't care. Like, whatever you decide to do doesn't matter. But am I worried about the Nets? No. And I also resent the statement of the Nets have been a better-run organization than the Knicks. I don't like the idea of that. I don't like it at all because they haven't.
What?
They have not been a better run organization than the Knicks. They have not.
In the past 5 years, they have.
Time out. Let me ask you this. If they didn't make the playoffs, would you still feel that way?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's a different conversation for a different day. I'll just leave it at
no,
this.
No, I 100% not. Would feel the same way because, like, dude, they've made as much as possible out of nothing. Like, okay, let me ask you this. Who's a better player, Caris LeVert, or who's the best player right now on the fucking Knicks?
Yeah, Nick, but you can't ask me that. I'm biased. Of course I'm going to say Knox, I think, is a better player than LeVert. Or
are you
Dennis
kidding
Smith
me?
Jr.
Caris LeVert is way better than fucking Knox. Way fucking better.
You're asking me as a Knicks
fan. Valuable minutes in the fucking playoffs against the Sixers. He won them a fucking game in game one.
I hear you.
Fucking Knox was the most inefficient player in the league. The entire fucking league. The most inefficient player.
I hear you. But you're asking me, a Knicks fan, who do I think is better than a Nets player? I'm going to tell you everyone on my roster. Everyone on my roster. I'm high on all my guys.
Yeah, but that's just – see, but you know you're being stupid. That's what I'm saying. Like, just look at it objectively.
No, I'm not.
Like,
because if you're asking me
– and you know what? And here's the thing. I don't even like D'Angelo Russell. I don't even like I'm not even a fan of his. But, like, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, even though he played fucking deplorable against – the Sixers in the playoffs. He just missed three after three after three after three, even though he won the three-point contest. But, like, even him, I'd rather have than Knox. I'd rather have him than Dennis Smith Jr. The only guy that I could maybe make an argument for, there's two. I do like Mitchell Robinson, and I do like Lonzo Trier. I like those two guys. But everybody else on that roster is just garbage. Like, at least not, I'm not saying they don't have – a window to get better and to be good players in the future. I'm just saying, like, as of now, they are not good.
All I'm saying is I don't grade that way. I don't grade that way because look how high we were on Tatum and then look at the season he had this year. Same for Jaylen Brown. I don't grade that way. I grade what I personally feel your potential to be. And I feel as though Knox, very young as he is going to come into not only his NBA body, but his actual talent. He's going to find his niche and excel in it. Same way I think of Trier. Same way I think of Mitchell Robinson. I'm very high on Dennis. I think once Dennis kind of figures out exactly what he's going to be in that roster, he's going to fit in great. But I don't grade guys off of, oh, they're a rookie. They had a great first season. Yup. Nope. That guy's hit. No. Let's. Because if LeVert has a bad sophomore season, then can I – and Knox has a good sophomore season, can I come in and say that Knox is now better?
Well,
no, it doesn't work like
first
that.
First of all, LeVert already had a sophomore season, and he improved on his rookie season. And
he wasn't a rookie,
like,
last year?
No, he was a rookie the year before.
Oh. Did we hear anything about him the year before?
Yeah, he was banged up when he got drafted. He had I think an ACL injury, so he didn't play the majority of his rookie season, and that was why he ended up going so low. He went 22 overall to the Indiana Pacers, who traded him to the Nets for Thad Young, and that was like one of the first big moves that the Nets front office made. In order to kind of bolster their young core, he's gonna be a really good player, man. He's a fucking solid shooting guard. He plays defense. He can score off the dribble. He can shoot from three. He does everything that you'd want a shooting guard to do. And I think he could be. He's that kind of player who could be like a franchise level guy if you needed him to be. Or he could be a quintessential role player if you needed him to be. That's the prototype of what you want out of a player when you're in a big market. Because you obviously, when you're in a big market, you want to land big dudes, big free agents. So you want a guy who has that flexibility, and he totally fits that. Which is why I think the Knicks should be a little nervous with. The Nets having LeVert, I do, man. With the Nets having LeVert, with them having traded for Torian Prince, having Jared Allen, having Joe Harris off the bench and Spencer Dinwiddie off the bench, and all of this extra cap space, like, those are five guys that if you got two max guys to sign onto that team, you've got a built-in seven-man playoff rotation, plus whatever else you build around them. With room level exception or vet minimums or whatever, you have that ability. So, like, you have an easier job to build a contender than you do if you're the Knicks. Like, if you're the Knicks and you sign KD and Kyrie, you still have a lot of work ahead of you as far as building a contender. So if you're the Knicks, you really have to sell them on, look, you guys sign here. We're still going to be making moves to improve this roster. You're not signing on to this roster. Like, we are going to – all of these other guys, we will move them at the drop of a hat if you guys sign on. And we will even, like, move them, you know, maybe for less long-term value but more short-term value to help fit you guys. You got to really sell them on that. And, like, that's not the easiest sell. And you can't really do it before you get them because you can't afford to give up the assets that it would take, you know, and then not get those guys. So if I'm the Knicks, I am a little nervous right now.
I 100% disagree with you because I think what a lot of people are assuming is Kyrie goes to Brooklyn.
This is the weirdest thing. Hold on. Let me just point out the fucking irony in all of this. This is the weirdest fucking thing on the face of the earth. A Knicks fan being confident and a guy who's not a Knicks fan being, like, trepidatious about what the Knicks are doing. This is the weirdest juxtaposition that has ever happened on this show. It is has been so 99 times out of 100 that I'm like, Joel, calm down. Y'all are going to get KD. Don't worry. It's going to be fine. And, like, now that I'm like, shit, man, like, I don't know, man, like, Brooklyn's, like, making some moves, and like, all of a sudden, now you got this confidence? Like, where the fuck did this come from?
It's not confidence. It's, okay, everyone's assuming Kyrie goes there. He's bringing Durant. What if just Kyrie goes there? Am I supposed to just be afraid of a Kyrie-led team? You just finished telling me
what if Kyrie What if Kyrie gets Kawhi to go there? Then you should be scared.
What if he gets Kawhi to go there? Okay, so if he gets Kawhi to go there and the Knicks get Kemba and Durant, I'm looking at a really good New York rivalry. And we have the trump card of being able to trade our number three to get Anthony Davis. So we could have Kemba, KD, and Anthony Davis. So, no, I wouldn't be concerned about that either.
You got to fill out the rest of that roster. That's why
it's doable. It's doable. All I'm saying is
why
if you're a Knicks
trade
and
for
Dario Saric. If you're a Knicks and Nets fan, this offseason could end, and neither one of us have any of the major players we're looking for.
Very true.
That's why I told you before, I wasn't sold on us getting Kyrie or KD. I was okay with us growing our young core. I told you that's what my mindset was that I did not trust the Knicks could get it done. So I was thinking about the future and our young guys in developing it. I didn't put all my cards to the middle of the table. So, no. If we don't get them and Brooklyn gets them, it'd be the same as if we don't get them, if we didn't get them at all. So we have the same game plan. So, no, I'm not afraid.
Right.
I'm not. Because by the time that dynasty in Brooklyn ends, they'll be looking to rebuild. And what situation would I hope we will be in? A situation to where we are now winning, and we now have a core that could win for years to come rather than the next four or five. So that's why I'm not stressing out. I'm not stressing. What happens?
Okay, so you think, so I guess where you're at is if you don't get any of the big names, if say Katie stays and Kyrie goes to Brooklyn and, you know, whatever, like let's just say, and it's basically like if Katie doesn't come, nobody else comes and what have you. You're not afraid that the Knicks will spend like cap space on getting Kemba and Tobias or some shit like that?
That's a huge fear. But to me, it's like, okay, if you spend all that money on those two guys, like Tobias isn't a bad player, so the Knicks aren't going to get worse. Kemba's not a bad player. Like those two players don't make your team worse. All I'm saying is I just need the Knicks not to spend money that makes us worse. And a lot of people are like, how is that even possible? We spent money on Andrea Bargnani. That's how that's possible.
Right.
So, no, the Knicks are capable of spending stupid money.
Yeah, don't go out and give Nikola Vucevic a max contract is basically what you're saying.
Right. Or don't go give DeMarcus Cousins a max contract. Like, don't do stupid things is all I'm asking of them. So Chris Broussard, I was actually going to tell you about this. I didn't think we'd have time. Chris Broussard was saying he heard from the Knicks organization that from someone in the Knicks front office that if they don't get one of the big names, they're 100% fine with not getting anyone and just growing that young core. That's why
I did hear that.
I'm not worried.
I like that approach. I like that approach. If you don't get KD, then just like go back to the drawing board, draft RJ Barrett, and build with RJ Barrett, Mitchell Robinson. Oh yeah, yeah. Like he's definitely a blue chipper. But yeah, draft him. My fear would be I don't know how he necessarily fits with DSJ, with both those guys needing the ball in their hand. But nevertheless, I still think you draft him because he's got the most upside at number three. You just build around a young core, and then you try to essentially do what the Hawks have done and go around the league and say, hey, like, what expiring contracts do you want me to take on in order for me to accrue more assets to go with these Dallas picks that I have? I don't think that's a bad approach.
I mean, even if we do something like we give Beverly a deal, we give Marcus Morris a deal, and then we just surround some veterans with our youth and try to make that kind of push, that's essentially what the Clippers did. So to me, I'd be fine with you not spending max dollars, but spending enough money to put veterans on that young team. Right. And you putting veterans on that team and you growing that team that way, I'm completely fine with that. I just don't want you to stupidly spend money. Now we're stuck to these contracts we can't get out of. And then another great class of free agents becomes that we have to skip because we are now tied down to those guys you just gave max deals to. So that's why I'm like, just go back to the youth movement if you can't get the big fish. Simple.
Right. Yeah. And if you got to make a Trevor Ariza $15 million 1-year deal, if you feel like that's like a smart investment, okay. But like, don't sign a guy like that to long-term money.
And make some
trades in which you take on some bad salary, some bad expiring contracts to get some future assets and all that. It's just basically the way the Hawks have done it. I think the Hawks have laid out a very good blueprint on how to not fully Sam Hinkie the equation, but also while still gaining, trying to build a good culture and like a good winning effort culture, while, you know, still managing to lose a lot of games. you're trying to win those games, he's not winning them. That's a good way to do it. I really didn't think that. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. I'm very optimistic for your Knicks. I hope they get KD. I honestly hope they get KD and trade for AD and then get a bunch of role players around them. That'd be my ideal Knicks team. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see Patrick Beverley, Danny Green, Kevin Durant, Dario Saric, make a trade for Saric, and then, you know, Anthony Davis. Like, that'd just be so much fun. That'd be a great team. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it happens. It definitely won't happen exactly like that, but we'll see how it all plays out. Regardless, great show. Thank you, Juwan, for joining me tonight on a very impromptu full court press show. We'll be back on Tuesday to break down game 5 of the finals and any additional news. So be sure to join us then. Be sure to tune in for Monday Sucks this Monday at 6 o'clock. Gay and I will be breaking down all of the various news we got going on this Monday. And as well, be sure to check out Geek Vibes Live. We just recorded that, so that will be dropping any minute now. And then be sure to check out TS Top 10. That is coming up as well. So we got a lot of great pods for you all to check out, so be sure to do so. Please rate and review them. Five stars, please. Does a lot for us, so be sure to do that. And we will talk to you all very soon. Until then, peace.
Peace.